Today's Tuesday, August 4th, 2020, and this week on the Birdland BS Podcast. The Ravens make a couple of moves and they get down to the 80-man roster. Lamar makes number one in the NFL top 100 list, and I get my kudos. Bye-bye, Blyer. The reliever gets traded to the Marlins for a player to be named later. And The Rock buys the XFL. Stay tuned.
That time, so let's take it to the Birdland. That Baltimore home flavor is coming firsthand. Fred, Scott, and Ryan, tell them the word, man. Mixing a little BS to make it work, man. Sports, they got it. Want excitement? The topic. Make sure when they toss you the ball, you don't drop it. With all that swag, you're gonna listen regardless. Here comes the pitch, so it's time to get it started. It's Birdland BS.
Yes.
What's up, BSers?
What's up, peeps?
Fred, Scott, James in the studio today.
Why you gotta say his name like that?
What did I say?
James.
I mean, it's James.
You're used to a cadence. I get it.
Yeah, used to a cadence. Threw me off. Brian is busy with work. Yeah, he's got a lot of shit going on. Ryan is in his every other week phase right now, so I assume he's working today.
Busy with work, times
yeah.
two, yeah.
We got a lot in store for you today. We got a lot to talk about with the Ravens making a couple of moves as they get down to the 80-man roster. So we're going to talk a little bit about a couple of those moves.
Don't worry. AB is not one of those moves.
No,
Nick.
No, not yet.
We've anyway. Already seen you, Nick.
According to Nick, it's coming, though. It's coming. Lamar makes the number one spot in the NFL top 100 list. This happened right after last week's show, so we didn't get a chance to talk about it. So we got to give Scott his kudos.
I'll let you give me
yeah,
kudos later.
Yeah, we'll give him a little kudos. He got it right. And bye-bye, Blyer.
He gone.
As the Orioles make a couple of trades, including one of my favorites in the back end of that bullpen.
Yeah, he definitely was a good setup, man. And I just don't like some of the details of this trade. We'll get into those. Yeah.
And The Rock buying the XFL. You can't even say it, the XFL. The XFL.
Do you smell what the XFL is cooking?
$15 million for a project. Cheap. I mean, it seems cheap, but this is a project that hasn't worked now twice.
Let's be real about it, though.
We'll talk about it.
There's some details that you got to think about with all that.
Before we get into too much, we do want to remind you, if you've ever been injured at work or in an auto accident and weren't sure who to call, 855-MD-CRASH, the Maryland personal injury attorneys that'll have your back. If you find yourself in that unfortunate situation, and I know I have, give our team at MD Crash a call right away. We all know the cost of medical bills, lost wages, and pain and suffering can all add up quickly and potentially put you in a bad financial place. If you want a team that will handle your case, big or small, and just give you that peace of mind, save this number now. Again, save this number now. 855-MD-CRASH. It's 855-632-7274. Be sure to follow them on Facebook for some fun giveaways, including tickets. Well, not tickets anymore.
Say, there ain't no tickets this year.
Gift cards to some of your favorite hometown teams. Or restaurants. Teams, restaurants, whatever. That's how the show
is. It's a bunch of giveaways.
So we got let's start off with some flock news. The Ravens make a couple of moves this week, one of which was kind of a surprise to me, as they ended up waiving second-year defensive tackle Daylon Mack. I know, you know, he was, a fifth-round pick?
He's a fifth-rounder last year. I feel like it is a little bit of waste, but it tells me that they either have no faith in him or they have a lot of faith in the two guys they picked up this year, and I think the third and the fifth,
right,
which were Justin Madubuike, who we've talked about, you know, I feel like at nauseam and how much we see him bring value to this team as a third-rounder. And then Broderick Washington, he was our fifth-round guy. Both these guys can probably platoon what you would get out of Daylon Mack. So you wind up saving both these guys. Mack only played one game last year.
Yeah.
Right. And I think they qualified it as like a hip knee injury. I don't know how you have both of those, but somehow he was hurt. He wasn't able to perform. There's some underlying reason there. We don't know it, but I think the writing's on the wall that they trust these two guys more than they trust him.
It's just a surprising move. You know, it's not Raven-like to give up on a draft pick so soon. I understand, you know, they had to get down to the 80-man roster, and, you know, I don't know. It, like I said, there might be more to the story. He might have come in and kind of like a Michael Pierce situation without having the stats and the, you know, everything to back it up, where he came in and he was out of shape. You know, it's a guy that's what, like 6'1", 340 pounds. He's a big dude. And it just came down to, you know, too many bodies. It's a position of depth. We obviously added some, you know, some pieces in the offseason. We ended up keeping Justin Ellis on a one-year deal, who came in last year and filled in very admirably.
Yeah. I mean, for what he was able to do last year, one year, one mil, which is what we gave him back in March. I mean, the combination of him plus the two guys you pick up in the draft that can kind of sit behind him, platoon with him. I mean, I think it was surprising, but I think it makes sense. The more I started to analyze it and look at this, because my first question that popped in my head is going, who the hell are you going to put there now?
Yeah.
But then it was like, well, wait a second. We did sign Ellis, who did well last year. You've got these two guys you picked up in the draft that, you know, they were high on Badabuke. We talked about him, so I'm really excited to see what he can do. And he may get some snaps this year. Unless he comes out of camp on fire.
Yeah.
I don't know that he's going to get the starting role. I think it's going to be Ellis, but Ellis is that short-term deal that allows you to see what these two other guys are able to do and still have a guy that, who knows, maybe Ellis is the serviceable backup for them at that point.
Yeah, I got a feeling there's going to be something else that comes out about this story. We will find out that obviously he wasn't in shape or there's more to the story that we just don't know. Like I said, it's just very – I know this is Eric DaCosta's team now. It's not the Ozzie Newsome way of doing things, but he learned from Ozzie Newsome, and it's just not a Ravens way to give up on a draft pick so early, even though he was a fifth-round draft pick. You know, he's a later-round pick. After 1 year, and like you said, only seeing him really in a little bit of work last year in the one game.
Maybe it's something they know about that injury, because let's not forget about the fact that injury happened in November.
Yeah.
So, you know, midway through the season there, the guy goes down, can't come back. That injury could be more serious, and they're just saying, look, we're just going to wipe our hands clean at this point.
Right.
Because what is it really costing him? It's costing his rookie contract, but it's not – even if they had to pay anything out on him, a signing bonus or whatever, it's not going to be anything that's going to be of detriment to the salary cap.
That's true. Well, on the other side of the ball, another move that the Ravens made was, we had talked about it for weeks now, what are they going to do with that third tight end spot that's been vacant by Hayden Hurst? There have been some rumors around a couple of free agents, you know, Delaney Walker and Jordan Reed.
Both worked out for the team last week.
Right. Jordan Reed was actually apparently offered a deal from the Ravens, but he ended up signing with
– I didn't see that.
Yeah. Or at least they started negotiations, and then he ended up signing a deal with the 49ers.
Right.
But the Ravens end up signing tight end Jarrell Adams. Not quite the Jay Adams that I had in mind that would be on the Ravens this year, but, you know, whatever. He's another tight end that gives some depth to the position. I'm not going to pretend that I know a whole lot about this kid, but I'll give you facts. He's 27 years old. He was a sixth-round draft pick back in 2016 by the Giants. Hasn't really played a whole lot so far in his NFL career. He's had a total of 24 catches in 30 games. He played one game last year with the Texans. So don't expect this kid to light the world on fire. But an interesting fact about him was he went to the University of South Carolina, was actually teammates with Hayden Hurst early on in Hayden Hurst's tenure with South Carolina. He was kind of highly touted really coming out of college. He was projected, when I was reading up on him, he was projected between a second and fourth round pick.
Right.
Ended up going in the sixth round, but he was rated as one of the best blocking tight ends in that draft.
Which is, we've talked about that, something that they want. The big thing is, you know, he's got 24 career catches in 30 games, right? So with that stat, it's not over the top, right? But it's also, we don't know. My question is, how many attempts is it? I would hope they're not going after a guy that has hands issues and you're only going to have him being blocking tight end because you already have one of those.
Right.
And he does a damn good job at it.
Paid him good money to do it.
What this did tell me, and we wound up seeing it, was they did not have the faith in the undrafted guy that they got in Jacob Breeland.
Well, Jacob Breeland was a little bit of a different story. Jacob Breeland, he had the knee injury last year. I think he's only like 9 months removed from that knee injury. So he wasn't going to play this year anyway. So basically what the Ravens are trying to do is they released undrafted free agent Jacob Breeland today. It's more so just to try to get him through waivers and to kind of stash him. That's what the Ravens are hoping to do here with him. I got a feeling, though, that somebody else is going to see the talent because he was doing great last year. He was the top rated tight end in the first, four or five weeks of the season last year before the injury. And he played not, you know, a very potent offense, so they got a good view of what he can do. I know the Ravens are really high on him, but, you know, again, when you get when you got to get down to 80 positions this early on, you can't count somebody that's not going to produce for you this year.
So point of clarification, right? Yeah. If you take him off waivers, he doesn't have to make your roster, correct?
Right.
So in all reality, somebody could simply do this to keep him from being stashed on the Ravens.
Exactly.
So you could have, I mean, think about the Browns or Cincinnati or Steelers.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're smart, no Steelers fans should be listening, so we shouldn't let them do it. But, you know, if they're smart, they do that just to simply stop this kid because he does, yes, he's had the injury, but if he can come back in any form from prior to that injury,
yeah,
this kid could be a top-tier tight end. He's got a high ceiling.
Yeah, I think the kid could absolutely be a great value, especially for an undrafted guy. It's just like I said, he's not going to be any value to the team this year.
Let's be real. The only reason he's undrafted is because of the injury.
Right.
Had he not been injured, we're probably talking about a guy that was maybe a third, fourth round pick.
Right.
For some teams.
Potentially. But look, even though the Ravens bring in this kid, you know, from the Giants, Jarrell Adams, don't be surprised if they're not done with potentially wheeling and dealing with yet another free agent tight end. If there's any team that gets value out of their third tight end, it's the Ravens, right? You know what I mean? Like, considering Mark Andrews, in our opinions, top five tight end in the league
top three.
In your opinion, I think top five, like fringe top three for me. Hayden Hurst, you know, as a second tier tight end, had a decent year last year. Again, I think he's going to flourish in that offense at Atlanta, being a number one target now.
Yeah.
And then Nick Boyle, he's a blocking tight end, and we know how good he is as a blocking tight end, but he does bring value in the passing game. You know, he showed that he's got sure hands and that, you know, he's not afraid to catch the ball.
And we're not afraid to use a three tight end set either. We've proven that last year. So that is the other upside to a guy like Jarrell Adams. You mentioned the fact that he's such a good blocking tight end. Well, now if you have a pass-catching tight end, Boyle is, he's average catching-wise, you know, with his hands. But if you have at least two guys that can block, now you got to put those guys on either side. You got to account for them. You got to account for your guys on the outside. You got to account for Andrew. I think it just makes sense for them to go get another guy that can play that type of role, similar to what Hayden did, really.
Right. Agreed. Well, the other move that kind of caught me by surprise, I don't even want to say it's by surprise, but it just...
It made you cock your head a little bit.
It got my attention, and it perked me up, was that the Ravens ended up putting Matt Skura on the physically unable to perform list, PUP list, right? Add this to Andre Smith opting out last week. The O-line depth is starting to become a question at this point. And I think it's going to be the way it is for all NFL teams.
But I mean, look, we haven't really fully started camp, right? So there's that you could have guys that really step up, could go into a big role. Harbaugh in his interview this week, he didn't seem concerned about that at all.
Yeah, he seemed to be pretty optimistic.
It seemed to be like more of a, hey, this is just a precautionary measure to start camp so that we can limit him and not, in all reality, what they should have done with Hollywood last year, not to rush him back.
Right.
And so I think it's good that they're doing this. They're putting him in that category so that he can sit, rest. Maybe he's getting a little bit more time with the books. Maybe he's getting a little bit more time in the recoup room, you know, all that. So it's stuff that it made you cock your head and go, huh? But at the same time, you're like, the more you think about it, you're like, okay, it makes sense.
Well, we just know how important the O-line is to this offense and the success of this offense. Yeah. And he's obviously a piece that we need, you know, especially with some of the losses that we had this offseason in the offensive line. And then, like I said, Andre Smith, you know, he decides to opt out. Yeah. So there's a lot of question marks right now with the offensive line depth. But as long as he comes back prior to the season starting, then he doesn't have to miss the first 6 weeks. If he isn't cleared by the start of the season, they can remove or put him on the reserve PUP list, which means he'll have to miss at least the first six weeks of the season, which could be troublesome because, like I said, offensive line depth is going to be at a premium. What's up, James?
No, I thought he cleared his test when he came back.
He cleared his conditioning test. Yeah. But what they're doing is they put him on the pup list. You can clear your conditioning test just fine, but I think they're doing it not to rush him back, not to put as much weight on it. Yeah, you can pass the conditioning test. Maybe after the conditioning test, he was feeling a little sore. Great, you passed. Let's put you on the pup list so you can you can recover and then really start to. We saw what happened when you put the true weight on it. You were able to perform, but now let's give you the time to actually recover and not push
this
it.
This gives you an extra spot on your roster then.
For right now.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
If he didn't, then he would be on the roster.
Right.
But if he's on a PUP,
it's not
count,
occupying. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
So. I mean, we did see him in all the rehab videos that he was posting online. He looked great. He was doing footwork drills in his driveway with one of his, instructors or trainers.
Would have loved to have seen the conditioning test because I feel like that would have been good.
Yeah. So, and look, if Harbaugh is optimistic, I'm going to hold out faith that he'll be all right and he'll be there. So, the other big story happened right after last week. We talked about the top 100 list and the first six Ravens that made it. The only name that was still pending was Lamar.
Oh, where did he end up, Fred?
Yeah, so we knew Lamar was going to be in the top 10. We all kind of discussed it, and I think all of us said that he'd be in the top 5 hands down. If he wasn't in the top 5, the list was bogus. The list is bogus regardless, yeah. But if he wasn't in the top 5, it was bogus. But he lands at number 1 overall, which Scott said he would. I had him pegged at number 2 behind Patrick Mahomes. But I think the bigger surprise in this is Patrick Mahomes – at 4.
This happened. I get that it's voted on by the players. And there's people
which
out
is
there,
even more surprising to me.
Right. Well, there's people out there that are like, oh, well, you know, oh, he didn't do it because he couldn't perform in the playoffs. Well, neither did Lamar, if we're being real. Let's be honest, right? He had some struggles. Mahomes did as well in the, I think it was the conference or the
championship.
Where the first three quarters, he was like, almost non-existent. He didn't really play a role. And so people were trying to make that argument. But I'm sorry. The guy was second in MVP voting. And that's what I look at. That's why I said in the beginning, you're talking about the best player, right, of 2020. Well, going into it. Well, no, it's a list is of 2020. So it's
but it's
going
how they played in last season.
In 2019, right. So how can you not say that Lamar, this was my whole point last week, how can you not say the MVP wasn't the best player last year, period?
Right.
Right? Then your second guy, it should have been, in my opinion, Russell Wilson and Pat Mahomes should have been flopped. I think Russell should have been number 4, then Donald number 3, and then Mahomes number 2. I think that's how it should have gone.
Yeah, I mean... It's hard to put rankings on these players. I do agree with you because actually this award is based on regular season. The postseason doesn't have anything to do with it. Like you said, it's voted on by the players, but it's a regular season award. And there's no question about it. When you look at the totality of what Lamar did, Lamar was the best regular season quarterback last year, hands down. And, you know, Patrick Mahomes, in my opinion, could be a 1B. Not 4. I don't think Aaron Donald did enough last year to be ranked above Pat Mahomes. Aaron Donald wasn't even a factor in the game against us in St. Louis or in LA last year. Wasn't even a factor against us. I don't know. I don't know if he did enough. Russell Wilson was in the conversation for MVP all year long when the MVP discussion started. I think he had a great year last year. And again, when you look at the weapons, the offensive weapons that Pat Mahomes has around him compared to what Lamar has in Baltimore and what, you know, Russell Wilson has in Seattle, Pat Mahomes is blessed with the talent and the speed and everything that he has at that position. So kudos to Lamar, man. He becomes the first player in NFL history since this award's been announced to go from not ranked 1 year to number 1 overall. Kind of crazy.
I mean, rightfully so. And it was great to see him in this interview because he was real humble about it too, right? It goes back to everything we said, Lamar. Every time we talk about an award and Lamar's name,
right?
He says, yeah, it's great. It's nice, but I want a Super Bowl.
Yeah. And that's what I love about him. He's just so humble. I think if I'm a player, this award means the most to me because it is voted on by my peers. You know what I mean? It's voted on by the players that, you know, I play alongside with.
Nick says the top 100 is voted on by the players, right? So that number 1 is a statement.
It's 100% agree with you. I think that, to me, shows more respect, and I think that has a little bit more weight to it than even the NFL MVP award. I feel like the NFL MVP award is just a commercialized award. You know, it's something that the league pubs up. But, listen, Lamar's focus – is dead set on winning a Super Bowl. And it has been since he was drafted. It was the first message that he told us as Raven fans,
you're going to get a Super Bowl.
You're going to get a Super Bowl out of me, right? It's been that message. And then he had the conversation with Ray Lewis after that, that he wants to be the Brady of Baltimore. You know what I mean? He wants to bring multiple championships to him. How can you not love this dude? Like, how can you just not love this guy? I mean, the haters out there that just want to pick him apart because they're jealous of whatever it may be, or, you know, for the sake of just getting retweets and comments, whatever it may be. It's frustrating, I mean, at this point. But I know Nick has obviously been clamoring for AB out there. We've talked about this pretty much week in and week out, so we might as well bring it up.
It's your annual AB segment.
Yeah, right. Well, the league officially announced that he's going to be suspended for the first 8 weeks of the season. So the contract value obviously diminishes a lot for whoever takes that risk on. But at least now we know what the punishment's going to be moving forward. So my question to you is, do you think the value in signing this guy, knowing that he'd come in mid-season if we have a full 16-game season, is worth it?
I'm not signing him now. I'm waiting to see if I'm any team, not just the Ravens. I'm waiting to see where I'm at the end of week 8.
Okay.
Because he's suspended no matter – that suspension starts from week 1 no matter whether he's on a team or not. So why not just wait and then go, hey, if I'm one piece away or if I feel I'm one piece away and that piece is a wide receiver, go, hey, this is what we're willing to offer you. We'd love to have you be a part. We're going to make this run. We think you'd help us get there, but take it or leave it.
All right,
this is what you're getting.
Let me fast forward. Ravens are 7-1, and at week 8, 7-1, leading the division, best team in the AFC. They haven't had any injuries at wide receiver. You've got what you've got right now at wide receiver. Are you even considering it?
I'd have to double check myself on the statement, but I believe the second half of the season is our ease of schedule is better the second half.
Strength of schedule?
Yeah, strength of schedule. So if we're 7-1 and we've already gone through most of our toughest games, I don't know. Unless I need depth or an injury comes up, I can't go for it. So I don't know that I would say it.
So I got to point out Drew's comment here because I 100% agree, and this is basically stealing my words right out of my mouth. Where to go? AB will do something else dumb or foot and mouth by Labor Day. And I 100% agree with you. Like, I am not doing anything to sign this guy now. That's why I asked you this question. Yeah, no. I think you answered it good. I'm not doing anything to sign this guy now. If we get down to week 7 and he's held true, he stayed in shape, he hasn't done anything, nothing's happened, and he's been good, I might actually consider it at that point. But again, it's going to depend on the circumstances. If we're 7-1 and we don't have any injuries and we're rolling along, no, it makes no sense for us to break that chemistry or do anything that might be risky to the locker room. It's not worth it. But if we're sitting at, 4-3 and we're struggling to move the ball through the air, but yet we still have a good shot at getting to the playoffs.
Cusp, yeah.
We're on the cusp. I might consider it at that point, especially if he's kept clean. And that's the first time I've said that, because normally I would not even be considering AB. You all know this. Like, I think he's a cancer to the locker room. But again, if he's available at the right price and we're trying to go after a ship, right? You know, Lamar wants his championship and he's going to push us over the top. I'm open to it at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a valid, and we both make the same argument, is the situation at this point has to be right. And I'm not going to say dire, because it's not an example, but it would be something that you'd have to make the consideration. Something has to happen in order to consider it. So
he would fit well. But the thing is, I think if this season's going to be weird. So I think a lot of injuries are going to happen. Hamstrings, ACLs. If a wide receiver goes down, and I think if a good wide receiver goes down for a different team, I see maybe Baltimore – pick him up to help and take away from that. But also having his cousin on the team, I think that will help too with the whole thing. But it's a hard decision. Right now, I would say sign him, because his videos, his workout, like, he's uncomfortable. He looks good.
Again, it's never been about his talent.
We understand. He's doing the right thing. He talked to Roger Goodell.
Right.
He's been working out. He's in shape. He's ready to go. But I feel like once football starts, somehow he finds a way to get in trouble. It's just weird.
The only detraction to that argument that I would have is this: we're talking about a guy that said, I'm going to retire from the NFL. And a week later, he goes, oh, I won't play. I won't play. Like,
this is also a guy that stirred all this shit in Pittsburgh to get out of Pittsburgh. Yeah. He goes to Oakland, and in day one, he starts shit literally the first day that he's there in practice and everything, and it's all downhill. He goes to New England. That falls apart. Like, it's just – it's a –
We didn't hear
trend
anything.
With this
we didn't hear anything bad about New England. I will say that we didn't hear it was they let him go because of what came out, but it had nothing to do with in the one game that he was there. Shit that we know of, shit didn't start.
He actually produced in the one game he was right. there.
And
he had
him,
a touchdown.
And him and Brady were on the same page. Yeah. Like it was there.
But it's weird. Apparently now the Steelers are in the mix. There's three teams. It's Seattle, the Steelers, and Baltimore.
And you can't rule out the 49ers. The 49ers are just signing everybody at this point, I feel like.
They lost a wide receiver, right? Godwin?
Yeah. Godwin, yep. Absolutely. So, I don't know. I think somebody will sign AB at some point, and it'll take this conversation away from the Ravens, and we won't ever have to worry about bringing this up again, Nick. But, like I said, in the scenario that the Ravens are at 4-3 or something like that, right before the suspension, I'm open to it. I'm going to consider it. But we talk about weird things, and we talk about this 2020 year as just being strange, and are we even going to have a football season or anything like that? Well, today they announced the CBA, I guess, COVID amendments were finalized today, which actually we were going to have a guest on the show today.
I was excited.
Yeah, who's an NFL players agent, Jobeth Bowers. He's got some personal things going on today, so he's going to come next week to kind of dive a little bit deeper into it. But I at least wanted to bring it up today and just kind of cover a couple of the big, I guess, storylines from this amendment.
Initial thoughts, yeah.
First thing is there's going to be fines of $50,000 for anybody that refuses to take a test. What's your thoughts on that?
I'd have to read the verbiage. Is that just COVID?
I'm assuming this is just COVID.
Okay.
I don't know the fine print to it.
If the fine print just says refuses any test, that's the NFL getting like sneaky. Like, okay, drug test. No, I don't want to. $50,000 fine. Like, I could see them doing that. But at the same time, I think, you know what? At the same time for COVID, I think it's actually smart. It makes these guys pay attention and be aware. Look, if you get it, there goes your season first off in most cases. But B, if you don't want to take it because you think you might have and you don't want to take the chance, now there's financial consequence. I don't know that you're going to have a lot of guys
so
that do this.
I agree with your sentiment, but I don't think this penalty is enough. You're talking about multimillionaires. $50,000 is like a double cheeseburger from McDonald's for them. $50,000, not for every player, but for some players, right? So if I think I might have it, but I don't want to stop playing, all I got to do is pay a $50,000 fine to play, and now I'm putting all my teammates at risk? I think this is stupid. Like, the fact that that's even if you're going to miss a test, there needs to be a stiffer penalty, in my opinion, than 50 grand.
Or it needs to be a valid reason. I don't see any player – I honestly don't know that I see any player refusing a test, personally.
I know, but why would they even have this clause there that gives the player the option to do that? I can't see somebody – because he's going to get ridiculed. I mean, destroyed by the locker room, by the media, by everybody, if somebody refuses to take the test. But why is that even an option? Like, the penalty needs to be a lot stiffer, in my opinion, than $50,000.
Have we? I mean, here's the question, and I truly don't know the answer, and I don't know if you do either. Do we know if anybody in the MLB or the NBA or anywhere else has refused a test?
I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question. And how are they handling it?
Right, if they've heard about it and they don't, it's
obviously. I think it's mandatory.
Mandatory in the NBA.
I thought it was mandatory.
It's mandatory in the NBA. I thought it was in MLB. But
why is it not mandatory in the NFL? Like, why are we even giving them?
You're giving them an opt out.
Yeah. Well, an opt out of the test.
maybe most teams. I mean, we talked about the teams putting forth their plans. Maybe most teams said, if you don't take a test, you're not coming into the building.
Right.
So now, not only are you can't, what they don't want is players refuse to take a test and still get paid.
Right. So my thing is, like, because the way that this was, again, worded, I haven't dove deep into it enough to know the fine print on it, but the way it said was fines of $50,000 for refusing a test. Like, if I don't show up and I miss the test,
Yeah.
I can see them giving you a $50,000 fine and saying, well, you can't play until you get the test done and until you get
certified. You missed your test time, yeah.
And your penalty is $50,000 because you weren't here on time. I get that. But if you're refusing a test and then still have the ability to play, $50,000 is not.
Yeah. We're gonna have to talk to Joebeth about this. I'm really excited to talk, just talking about for this, sure, about him coming next week, because I think he's gonna give us, as a player's agent, I'm sure he's looked this thing over inside and out at this point and knows all the details, and I'm sure he'll probably even know more details by next week. So I'm gonna have a ton of questions. That fine's gonna be one of them. The opt-out deadline, I'm curious to get his take on this as a player's agent. We saw a few players speak out this week, including OBJ, who's not opting out, but was not happy that the NFL extended the opt-out. The opt-out was actually on Sunday originally.
Right, originally.
Was it Sunday or Saturday? It might have been Saturday.
It was over the weekend. I'm not sure what day it was.
But now they make it Thursday at 4.
Yeah.
My question is, did the NFLPA go to them and say, look, we have players that are still on the fence and want another week to decide, and they said, all right, we'll give you till Thursday. We'll meet you in the middle. We'll give you till Thursday, 4 p.m., and close the business, and then we need an answer because it's not fair to everybody else.
Yeah, I don't know. This is their livelihood, both financially and personally. They're putting their health and their family's health on the line by deciding whether they're going to play or not play this year. So I'm okay with them moving the deadline. They just gotta. This needs to be it. Like, they can't keep pushing it back. Like, if this is going to be your deadline, it's Thursday by 4, well, then that needs to be it. Because right now, I think the list is up over 50 players that have opted out this year. And like I said, there's been some pretty big names, some pretty substantial names. But, I mean, when you look at the totality of it.
It's 1.5 per team.
Yeah, it's not even 2 players per team at this point. And the Ravens have obviously felt that they had 2 of their guys with the Anthony Thomas and who was the other guy that opted out? Andre Smith, right, that opted out. So hopefully that's it for the Ravens, and we won't have to worry about that. But I can't blame players for opting out. And then the last part of this, to kind of full circle with the COVID amendment, you can bring a player now off the practice squad 90 minutes prior to a game. So if you do have a player that ends up testing positive before game time or anything like that, you actually have the ability to promote somebody from your practice squad even up to 1.5 hours before the game starts, which gives you that roster flexibility and allows you to have the depth if something like that does happen.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing I'm positive about. J.K. Dobbins.
Yeah.
He is ready to play.
Yeah. If you haven't seen this picture yet back here, dude, he looks like an absolute beast.
Yeah.
In his uniform. I mean, I wore 27 my whole life growing up, baseball, football, that's my number. So I got something a little special for that number. And obviously he's an Ohio State guy. So I got all these things in the back of my mind with J.K. Dobbins that I like. But I'm interested to see what kind of role he's going to have in this offense and how that's going to develop over time. Because, Mark Ingram in an interview this week, was nothing but speaking highly of J.K. Dobbins and wants nothing more than to be a mentor and to help him develop. And I think if there's anybody from the running back position that I would want mentoring me, Mark Ingram's the guy. I mean, he's just got the personality for it.
He's got the leadership.
He's got the leadership traits. He's not a me guy, right? He's not. At this point, he's what, 30, 31 years old, right? He knows he doesn't have too much longer left in the NFL. Yeah. He's at that point in his career where winning is important. It's not about him getting 1,000 yards or, all these individual stats. He wants to win a championship. And I think if anybody in that running back room is a realist, J.K. Dobbins is going to help him get there.
I think Mark also recognizes that J.K. is the future of this team.
Yeah.
And if he could perform, J.K. Dobbins could be the future of this league at running back.
Right.
This guy, you know Ohio State.
Yeah.
He played well. He was a force to be reckoned with, and he's coming in with, I'll say, semi the right mentality. I did hear a little bit of me, which is expected of a rookie, right? You expect a rookie to come in with a little bit of a me mentality, but he's also coming in saying, I'm ready to play and I'm ready to perform for this team.
The comments that I heard were exactly that. They were about wanting to contribute right away and wanting to be a part of winning a Super Bowl. I mean, his comments is his goals, not to be patient. He wants to win a Super Bowl by not sitting on the bench. And I'm okay with that attitude. That means you're going to come in, you're going to grind, you're going to bust your ass, and you're going to work and earn that position and earn those minutes.
And I guess that's where the me comes in, because he's here not to be patient, but sometimes you might need to be patient in order to make sure that you fully understand something, not just rush into it. Make sure you got the cadence on the calls. Make sure that you know all the playbook. We've talked about this, and the Ravens, defensively and offensively, having – what's been said is one of the most complicated offenses and defenses in the league. Yep. So to come in, this is a different – you're talking a different ball game versus what you were doing at Ohio State. Is it closer for Ohio State than it is like for Maryland, for example? Hell yeah. It's a lot fucking closer. But at the same time, he needs to just make sure that he's – before he goes diving head first, make sure you got your ducks in a row and listen to the guys around you. Mark Ingram, lean on him as a crutch. He will be happy. He will be more than happy to hand you off those touches that he would normally be getting.
Right.
If you're able to show, hey, I got the playbook down. I know what I'm doing. I get the calls. I get the audibles. All this stuff.
Yeah.
You just got to make sure you're doing that. Don't get antsy, too antsy, to the point that you start making mistakes. We've seen that with higher round draft picks that we've gotten, where they get a little antsy and they wind up making mistakes and it winds up costing them their career.
I'll say this about JK. I think if he can get the opportunity early on in the year to prove himself and start getting some carries, like, I feel like they kind of slow-footed it with Justice Hill a little bit. They didn't give him a ton of opportunities in the beginning of his career or his first 2 years. I think if they can do that with J.K. Dobbins and actually get him involved in the offense, right, and I think he could potentially be a guy that's in the running for Rookie of the Year coming into the season. Yeah, just because
that's bold.
We're such a – I mean, we set the NFL record for rushing yards in a season, right?
And that's why I'm saying it's bold. That's – I mean, you got four guys now that are going to be – you're going to want to feed the ball to.
Yeah, and listen, their squad is ridiculous. Gus Edwards looks leaner than he's ever looked. How will that impact him? Will the little bit lesser weight make him more explosive, make him a little quicker, or will it slow him down as far as like not being able to shed tacklers and not be able to shed blockers? So, because he's more of a north and south guy, right? He's not afraid of contact. He's going to run right into contact. So we'll see how that affects Gus Edwards. But J.K. Dobbins, if he gets the opportunity, he can be explosive in this offense.
He gets both, an open field, he's gone.
Both catching the ball out of the backfield and handing the ball off. So I'm excited from what we see from him.
I'm excited. I think, like I said, there's some things I want to see out of him, but I'm definitely excited for what his mentality is starting to evolve to.
Right. So we talked about opt-outs, right? One guy that I could not bring up was a former Raven. Decided to opt out.
I know exactly.
Former Raven CJ Mosley opted out for the 2020 season.
He just pissed the Jets, didn't give him a contract.
Man, I am so happy we avoided that damn contract. Because, I love CJ, and I love what he did when he was here. But what's he played? Two games? Three games since he's been with, since he signed the mega deal with the Jets?
If he's with the Ravens, does he not get hurt?
Right, exactly. I mean, listen, he had a great first game. I think he caught an interception and returned it for a touchdown in his first game with the Jets. But, he had the injury. He goes down. The Jets are footing that bill. I'm glad the Ravens aren't doing it. And it put us in a position to draft two very good inside linebackers in this draft, and Patrick Queen and Malik Harrison. So I think all in all, I don't wish ill will on CJ Mosley at all. I'm just glad that the Ravens didn't invest that money, because they can use that money now for other pieces they're going to need.
Like I said, I think he was overcompensating for what was lacking on that Jets defense.
Exactly.
It was him. It was basically him and Jamal Adams. That was it.
Right.
And so he was overcompensating a little bit, and it worked out to his favor for a game or two, and then he wound up hurting himself, and it hasn't worked out for him since. But you did bring up the linebackers and Queen.
Yeah.
And you were the one that brought my attention to this week. Queen has apparently been practicing in initial practices, has apparently been practicing with the green dot.
Yeah.
Which previously we know Chuck Clark was doing great in that role.
Right.
The end of last year. What does it tell you about Queen or about Clark or about both that they're asking Queen to practice with that green dot? What does it tell you?
It tells me that the team's just trying to prepare. Chuck Clark, I think, will have the green dot this year regardless. because he did such a good job last year. But you got to have a contingency plan.
I was going to say, Chuck, see your backup.
If Chuck Clark goes down, you got to have somebody. And traditionally, the green dot is held by the inside linebacker. I mean, C.J. Mosley held it for years. And then when he left, we moved it around. We had Eric Weddle was doing it and running in and out of the, you know, the huddles. And it just – the whole situation didn't work right. But Chuck Clark, to your point, has done a really, really good job with it. He's even Earl Thomas said, football IQ-wise, he's probably the smartest football IQ player on that defense.
Yeah.
So I think Chuck Clark will be the main guy with that green dot. But everything so far that I've seen with Patrick Queen, he seems very intelligent. Like when you listen to him in his interviews, he's well-spoken, seems to be, you know, pretty smart. So there's a lot to like about him. He just didn't have a whole lot of snaps in college. Very good. You know, he played good in that last season he was there. So I want to wait a year and just kind of see how he fits into this defense and get him familiar with the defense before you put that kind of responsibility on him.
He is, to your point, he is a guy that you look at him and football IQ wise, he's got a high football IQ, and that's why you have him out there. You're not having Chuck Clark out there because he's the best safety in the league, or, you know, he's a top tier safety in the league. He's good at lining people, setting people up to where he doesn't. I mean, really, guys have the green dot. They set everybody else up so they can either do their job to their fullest,
right,
or so they don't have to necessarily do as much. That's part of what Chuck Clark was good at. He was good at setting that front to where the back end didn't have to do as much work and saying, okay, you got this cover. This is the coverage. This is the play call. You're set. That's what he was good at.
Right.
And I think it translates.
Just for you fans out there that don't know what the green dot is essentially the communicator of the defense, right? He's the one that's getting the play calls from the sideline and then communicating everybody to, you know, the play calls and their formations and where they're going to line up and all of that. So it's got to be a guy that's a quick thinker that can react to, you know, changes in audibles and whatnot.
Yeah.
And C.J. Mosley was that guy for a long time. So another thing that had some ties to our podcast that I thought, man, we can't not bring this up because we've talked about it before. John Harbaugh, in an interview, was talking about Jimmy Smith. And we've talked about it, and the national media has talked about it, a lot of people have, about Jimmy potentially transitioning to safety, right, and that he was going to get more opportunities at safety. Harbaugh stood his ground and said, Jimmy's a cornerback. He's going to play cornerback. Now, he did say there might be certain situations where he's the number one, he's the number two, he's the number three. They might work him in the slot. They might move him around as far as cornerback goes, but his primary position, he's going to be a cornerback. Do you believe him?
Considering he was the one that, what, like all those weeks ago was like, yeah, we're going to try him out at safety.
Right.
No, I don't believe him. You said it. Now you're backpedaling because people are like, oh, Jimmy Smith's going to play safety now. And what's that going to do for Chuck Clark? And that's why you're backpedaling. I still expect him to play. I don't think you're going to see, unless Peters or Humphrey goes down,
right,
he is your number three guy at cornerback, maybe even number four. We've talked about this at nauseam. He's a better safety. He's better in position at safety because it's going to give him more time to react to the ball. If you put him at safety, I personally would make this prediction. If he was a starting or even rotational safety this year, he would be in the running, I'll say, for top five interceptions in the league.
I mean, it's hard to say. It's hard to predict. But I think, personally, I do think Jimmy's going to play a little bit of safety this year. I've said that, you know, since last year, the beginning of last year. I think he will play a little safety. And Wink Martindale, as creative as he is, will find ways to put him in all sorts of formations. I think, because Jimmy is a short tackler, he's a big dude, he's a strong dude, he's a smart football player. He's going to, I think, in my opinion, he might turn into a even better Anthony Levine. You know, Anthony Levine, they move him around. They line him at corner. They line him at safety. They use him at linebacker.
Special teams.
Jimmy has that kind of build to be able to do a little bit of everything. And I think he's at that point in his career where that makes sense for him.
Well, we saw it last year when they brought him on, and it was a cornerback blitz, but it was more like a safety blitz. He is good at that.
Right.
When they were rushing Marlon Humphrey, we were talking about this. I was getting pissed off. I'm like, you're pulling your number one cornerback out of coverage to rush when Jimmy Smith is the guy to do it.
Right.
He has the creativeness. He can keep with guys. After the injuries, I don't know that it's as true as much anymore. But let him use – he does have a fairly decent football IQ. Let him use it.
Right.
If it's rotational with Chuck Clark, if it's rotational with Earl Thomas, I don't care. But he needs to get those snaps out there at safety, and I expect him to see it. Craig says the same thing. He believes him to agree, but I don't think he will play all the snaps at safety. I don't think he will either, but he needs to play, I'll say, a good portion of them at safety.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do think we'll see him transition to safety this year. Like I said, I just think it's not going to be a full-on transition. He will be primarily a corner, but you'll see him line up at a few different positions on the field this year. All right, Scott, it's time for the Liquor Stop Brew of the Week. What the hell are we drinking on today? It's got me tripping.
It's got our fans tripping, too, because they can't see through it. They're see-through it, right? It's all see-through, right? So this is from Blue Earl Brewing Company. We posted on Facebook prior to the show. Did you put it on Twitter or just Facebook?
I just put it on Facebook now.
But it's a hazy at the heart IPA from Blue Earl Brewing Company, which is out of Smyrna, Delaware. This is honestly very, very typical IPA to me. They say that you can taste the hints of tangerine, mango, pink grapefruit, ripened peach. I mean, I don't necessarily get the peach. I get the normal, out of an IPA, you get the normal, like, citrusy kind of flavor.
It's definitely got
too.
A citrus taste to it, but I don't taste all that.
Yeah, I don't taste all of it either, but, you know, we've said that we don't have the most refined palates when it comes to IPAs.
I definitely don't.
Jared, it's up there, got that, picked up some Broken Skull. Steve Austin's Broken Skull Brewing Company IPA. I've had it before. The guys hadn't, so we're going to try that a little bit later tonight. But make sure, if you guys haven't been up there and you need some brews, go up and get yourself some Brews of the Week. Go up and get whatever you may need. They got a good selection of wines, alcohol, liquor, beer up there at Liquor Stop. A lot of craft brews, a lot of local stuff. Make sure you mention that Birdland BS sent you. Get your 10% off.
All right, Scott, it's time for some Bros, Bos, and O's, and I'm excited. I'm excited, man. Orioles baseball is back-ish. I mean, we're playing, right? Some days, depending on how the other team depends to, you know, follow the rules and all.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see if we play this game against the Marlins tonight.
But if I told you, after 8 games, we'd be sitting at 5-3 overall. Yes, I get it. We lost 2 games to the Yankees. I get it. But we just swept the Tampa Bay Rays. And we'd be sitting in second place in the AL East. The Yankees are 6-1. Yankees are really good. Yankees are a really good team. Yeah. But at 5-3 overall after 8 games, would you believe that?
I normally would say we're 8 games into a 162-game season.
Yeah, right.
But we're 8 games into a 60-game season. We are literally less than, one-seventh right. into the season, right? Just under that. So, or just over that, technically. I'm surprised. I'm happily surprised. Yeah. I'm going to take it. There's some things I know we're going to get into that have had me, questioning my head. We've seen the base running blunders. We've seen, some issues with.
It definitely hasn't been the prettiest of baseball at times.
No. But
we're 5-3.
And I think we're what? I think we're third now. We're either third or we're fourth in the AL.
Third in the AL and I think seventh overall in Major League.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm happy with it so far. And actually, I'm sitting here thinking about it. Did we include, when we set this up, did we include yesterday's game? I don't know that we did.
I think so.
Did we? Okay.
I think so.
Okay.
Not
we're either 8 or 9 games. Either way,
right.
We're still in a good position here.
Yeah. And listen, Mike Elias is still in rebuild mode. Don't get it twisted. Just because we're 5-3, we're not going after a championship yet, right?
He's still putting chips out on the table.
He's still figuring out, making phone calls, because there was a couple of moves that happened this week, one of which kind of flew under the radar. Right-handed pitcher Hector Velasquez was traded to his former team, talking about Mike Elias' former team in the Astros, for a player to be named later. So
I hate that.
I hate the player to be named later. And you know what I hate about it even more is when a guy like Richard Blyer, who was the surprise move this week, gets traded to the Marlins, who, you know, I guess are just trying to field a team at this point because everybody's got COVID, right? He gets traded to the Marlins for a player to be named later.
Here, Dick, go get COVID.
Yeah, right.
Like, that's what it seemed like.
Were you surprised by the move for Blyer?
Yes. I mean, look. He's pitching well. He's coming back off the injury that he had early last year. He had some towards the end of the season last year. He had some good spots. There's still a little bit of struggles. So far this year, he's looked fairly good. He looked good in spring training. He's looked good at times this year. And he, I think he was kind of the, I don't want to say the veteran holding things together out there in the bullpen, but it sure as hell felt like it because you get rid of him and the next day the bullpen blows a 4-1 lead.
Yeah, no, that's true. Shout out to my boy Nate from Full Count Chaos, who had me on his podcast the other
day.
Great
episode, by the way.
It was a great show.
Not just because you were on it.
As always, this guy, if you're an Orioles fan, it's an Orioles-only podcast. It's audio only. It's called Full Count Chaos. Go find it on
he's
all the...
He's a freaking natural.
Oh, yeah. He's been in the radio business for years.
We need to have him on.
He's hysterical. Just a good dude. We talked about this move during his show, and at first, the initial shock value was Richard Blyer's like our best piece in our bullpen. Why are we getting rid of it? But then like 5 seconds later, I started thinking about it. Like, all right, he's 33 years old. We're going through a rebuild. We've talked about this. We need to be open. There's not a single chip that's not at least conversational on the table right now. Not at least somebody that we can have a conversation about. And Richard Blyer at 33 years old, by the time the Orioles are actually in the thick of things and competing again, is not going to be a piece for the future. And let's face it, the one thing that the Marlins got going for them is they got COVID going for them. But they've also got a very, very good farm system. So even though this is the player to be named later, I think whatever that player is going to be more of a part of our future than Richard Blyer is.
I agree with that.
I understand what you're saying. Like right now, in the now, he'd be that guy that would have come in and we'd be sitting at 6-2 right now. We wouldn't have blown a 4-run lead, right? That wouldn't have happened. But again, you got to at least listen to all the offers that are out there for anybody at this point.
I mean, I have to know, like, okay, I guess that's the one thing that's got me scratching my head. Velasquez, I get, he was never a big guy that was going to be out there. But Blyer, there were questions when Blyer was dealing a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Do we deal him at that point? Because you could really get something for his value because he was pitching really well.
Yeah.
He comes back from the injury. He looks to be pitching well. I just don't, in a shortened season, I don't know. I didn't look this up, to be honest. I don't know when his contract's up. I don't know if it's up this year or next year. What value are you really going to get out of him? I get it's a player to be named later, but is that a player that's in single A?
Right.
Or is that a player that's in double A right now? Player in double A, which I highly doubt. I think it's a single A or you know, lower. I don't know.
Point is, Blyer's 33 years old. If you're trading him away for a guy that's in his early 20s, a guy that's 23 to 25 years old, that piece, regardless if he's at low A, single A, high A, double A, doesn't matter, that piece is more likely going to have a bigger impact on the future than Blyer would at this point. Because, again, how many good years of Blyer do you really have left? You probably got 1 or 2 years of decent baseball left out of him. And if we're honest, I know we're all Oriole fans out there, we're diehards, but 1 or 2 years from now, the Orioles are not going to be competing for the World Series. Not yet. We've got some pieces that need to come up. Nate and I talked about Verstad, the draft pick this year. I'm super excited about him. But to think that he's going to have a big impact at the major league level in the next year is just being unrealistic.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to come up. But obviously, you're going to have Adley Rutschman come up before he comes up, so it's just not going to happen. My biggest concern is that in a year like this, where we are, and really, let's be real, what the Marlins are going through.
Yeah.
What is Richard Blyer really going to do for the Marlins when you can't field a team?
Let Derek Jeter and that fucking crew figure that out. I don't care as long as we get a decent chip in back.
That's the thing, is if it doesn't pan out, they're not able to use him. They're not able to play him. I'm just throwing this out there because it happened. This game tonight was delayed. I don't know if it started yet because of that. It started?
Okay, good.
Okay, so it started. What if that was Richard Blyer that got it, right? Or that they're going to blame the Orioles that he had it. And that player to be named later value drops in what we thought we might get.
And that's true. That could absolutely happen. But again, we know for fact Blyer is not going to be a benefit to this team in the future, right? So you just get what you can get for him at this point. And I feel like that should be the way it is across the board.
PTBNL just makes me uneasy this year.
Right.
When it comes to, you know.
I know.
You literally don't know what you're getting in return.
That's a gamble, right? You just don't know what you're getting. It's kind of like the compensation pick with the NFL. You don't know where that compensation is going to work out depending upon how they do the next year. But
yeah,
we'll see. So Pitching wise, obviously John Means was the guy that we were high on coming into this year. Pitched great, was in the running for Rookie of the Year last year. Didn't make the opening day start because he had some fatigue with his arm, so they gave him a little bit of time to rest. Gets roughed up in his first outing in five innings in the first at his first start. But I think the most impressive thing in this game, he was clocked at like 96 consistently. Yeah. He was bringing the heat in this game.
Your arm was feeling good. And look, the
maybe he's a little juiced up. Maybe he snorted a line. I don't know, but he was doing something because he was juiced up a little
he
bit.
He was jacked up too.
Yeah.
He obviously given up five runs all in the first inning. It hurt, but he kind of settled in the second and the third, and then he gets one out in the third. So he's got 51 pitches through two and a third, and Hyde pulls him. And I'm like, okay, wait a second. Is this just because he's complaining? Did we? And I was expecting to hear something like he had arm fatigue again. I haven't heard a damn thing.
Right.
So why the hell did you pull him? Let him get to 65 pitches, maybe. They had to have had a pitch count on him.
They absolutely did. I mean, again, he hadn't pitched in a couple of weeks, right? He's complaining of arm fatigue, so you don't want to throw him out there and pitch him 80 to 100 pitches. He's already given up five runs, right? So if you're trying to salvage the game, you kill two birds with one stone, get him out there. He got his 51 pitches in. Let him get a little bit of rest. Ramp him up for his next start because John Means 100% is part of the future. He is part of the rebuild. He will be a part of this rotation as long as he stays healthy.
Or unless they decide to trade him because he's doing so well.
Yeah, John Means would be one of those guys.
He's like a bubble guy.
There's no pieces that I'm not fielding calls for. But for John Means to go, it would have to be for the right package. Definitely not a player to be named later.
I'll tell you one guy so far that I've been impressed with that I would be fielding calls. I'm constantly fielding calls.
Adios. Arrivederci.
Alex Cobb.
Yep.
You know, he's looked good. He's had his ups and downs. He had his ups and downs in his pitching game on Friday. But he still pitched. He gave up two earned runs on four hits through 87 pitches through four. 87 pitches through four. It wasn't horrible. It sounds like a lot, but it wasn't a horrible outing. There were some bad calls, in my opinion, on the strike zone.
Yeah.
Which I know that you and Nate from Full Count, you guys were talking about that in the automated strike zone. Yeah. 100% agree. But that's one of those things that he's starting to look in the AL East like Cobb of old.
Yeah.
Now was the time to trade him. I tell you who you're trying to call. I'm trying to call Boston or I'm trying to call the Yankees.
Yeah.
Because while the Yankees look good at the plate, pitching in the bullpen is a little suspect.
Yep.
And their starting rotation, they've had some holes in occasionally. They're 6-1, but still, they could use it or somebody goes down. Boston could use it to try and get some form of pitching, some resemblance of pitching of AL East pitching for them.
Right.
I'm fielding calls, and I'm trying to push for one of those two teams because both those teams have pretty decent farm systems right now as well.
Agreed.
So you can go kind of have your, I don't want to say have your pick, but maybe have your pick from some single A and maybe even some guys that just went into double A.
I think the Yankees make the most sense. I think they might come calling, but they're definitely not going to call this early. They need to see a few more games out of him. To your point, I think they need to see him get a little bit deeper into games, that kind of thing. I think that's true for the entire pitching staff, right? Like, if you want to kill your bullpen, the easiest way to do it is by getting them in a game in the fourth and fifth inning. Like, you've got to get to a sixth or seventh inning at least once or twice a week. You got to give your bullpen a rest. You know, you're just going to wear these guys out. But speaking of bullpen, right, we've got a future Hall of Famer down there right now in 30-year-old Cole Sulcer. This guy.
Damn, does Elias look like a goddamn genius?
What? We talked about, you know, for years with Dan Duquette and his dumpster dive finds and the Nate McClouse of the world and all these guys that somehow this guy would find and get some sort of magic out of him. Who the hell is Cole Sulcer? He comes in at 30 years old. Nobody's ever heard of this guy, and he's pitching lights out. I know he gave up the one blown save, but he's done really, really well.
He pitched for the Rays. He's done well. Like you said, in four opportunities, three saves so far. I'm happy with that. And let's look at some numbers for a second, right? ERA is 4.5. That's because of that one blown save.
Yeah, the one bad game.
If it wasn't for that, we'd be looking at around, I think it's a 2.01 when I did the number. Somewhere around in there. So not a bad number.
No.
But let's take a listen to this. WHIP, which is the number that we both agree is probably the more telltale sign of a pitcher.
For those who don't know, that's walks and hits per inning pitched.
So he is at 0.670.
Yeah.
Givens, who is our previous closer, who's been crap.
Yeah, who should never have been in the closer role to begin with.
He's at 1.33.
Yep.
The guy that we talked before the show, and you were talking about, James, in Castro, because I love Castro in a starting pitching role. He's still looking good in what the role that you said he should be in.
Yeah.
In the relief.
He's in that middle relief, even setup kind of guy, yeah. I think is ideal for Castro.
But he's at .920.
Trade him tomorrow.
Sulcer's at .67.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, it's small sample size. It's only four games. But again, he's done it against some of the best hitting teams. We just talked about it. We played two games against the Yankees. We've done this. And Tampa Bay is nobody to bat an eye at.
Right. And to put that in perspective for a second, that's one walk or hit per every other inning pitched.
Right.
That's what that equates to. He's giving up one walk or one hit. Those numbers, to give comparison, those numbers are Britton-esque, Britton in his Orioles prime-esque.
Whoa. I'm not comparing him to Britton yet there, but I get it.
The number
I like
on
what you're
paper,
laying down.
On number on paper right now is Britton-esque.
Okay.
Or even Jim Johnson in his prime-esque.
Yeah.
Right? Those numbers are there. This kid has a lot of potential, and it just
– So I
look at it and I say this kid is one of those guys that – Elias has figured out, and it just goes to show you he's looking at numbers, and that's a number he's looking at.
Speaking of numbers, so Joe Carlozo chimes in. Carlozo, I got that right there, right? says pitcher strikeouts are up for this year, and he's absolutely right. Actually, the Orioles just set a team record with five consecutive games with at least 10 strikeouts. That's incredible considering this hodgepodge of players that we got going on. Pitchers that, like I said, we've never even heard of at this point. Guys that are just trying to keep a job at the major league level. I told Nate on his show, we're basically, with our starting rotation, just picking guys up at bus stops, right? It's like the old school movie where they're just grabbing guys off the street. That's what this roster feels like, but it's working so far.
And somehow it's those guys that are doing better than guys that have been established for years.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's been great to see. And then on the flip side of that, right? Like, let's talk about the hitting and the offensive side of the ball, right? Because for me, the guy that's been standing out, and it's a guy that actually stood out to MLB.com because they did like their, you know, best players, biggest surprise players, whatever you want to call it on MLB.com. And for the Orioles, they chose Hanser Alberto, and he's actually one of their top three picks of guys that are just surprisingly lighting on fire to them. We saw this last year out of him with his bat. His glove, I still say Hanser Alberto has a subpar glove. Yeah. I'd love to see him in a role where he's a DH. I think that's where he's best.
Yeah.
But he leads the team. As of Sunday, he led it in six categories. He's down by two categories this time. But he leads in four categories. Hitting, he's batting .429. That's through 35 at-bats. He's got 15 hits. So literally almost every other time he's at bat, he's getting a hit.
Yep.
His OBP, so his on-base percentage is .459. That leads the team. And his OPS is 1.145. He leads the team, and I think he's like 10th in the league.
Yeah.
As far as that number goes. He's also got two home runs, which is tied for second, four RBIs, which is tied for third, seven runs, which is second, and his slugging percentage is .686, which is second on the team. Like, all these numbers just keep adding up. This guy's good, and here's a guy. I don't know that he's the future of our team because he has been in the league a little while. I want to say he's 26?
Nope.
You're not getting rid of him?
No, I'm saying he's not a part of the future. Yeah, I think this is a guy
that... I thought you were saying nope, he's...
No, I don't think he's a part of the future. Again, I'm fielding phone calls. Like, if this guy continues to put up numbers and somebody needs him for that extra push, they want to put that bat... To your point, he's a DH role, right? Well, the DH is now this year consistent.
Universal.
It's universal through the AL and NL, which means... Double the amount of teams that have interest in this guy for that specific type role. So if he can continue to put up the numbers, I'm 100% fielding phone calls for him. It's crazy what he's doing because when you watch him, he's a very free swinger, right? To your point, you said he's hitting .429, but his OPS, his on-base percentage is .459. So it doesn't take a whole lot of pitches. It doesn't get walked often. He swings at the ball, but his contact, right, his contact percentage, and it's good contact, being able to find holes and whatnot, is great. And he's doing this against some of the best pitching in Major League Baseball. I mean, some of the top pitchers in Major League Baseball we faced in these first eight games of the season. So for him to put up these numbers, it's not just against just, you know, an average run-of-the-mill pitcher. This is these are good guys.
Well, and he's not the only guy that's producing. You know, I look at it's a guy that my I love. You know why? You guys both know why. He loves his favorite player on the Orioles. Can you guess who it is?
Who?
I'll give you a hint. He played a lot of left field last year.
He
had a fan base from the UK.
Anthony Santander?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. He'll go, Anthony Santander. And he's pronouncing it better than Garceau pronounces it. Hey, he's 4 years old.
That's
but
great.
Anthony Santander, he continues to produce runs, right? Yeah. He's only hitting .273. But
Which isn't bad.
No. But he now lead. I think he's leading or he's tied for lead on the team with like 7 or 8 RBIs.
Yep.
He's right there at the top. He's tied for second in home runs, I think, at this point. So he's just continuing to produce. He's continuing to bring those runs across the board.
Yeah.
And that's what you need. That's what small ball and, you know, all this stuff that we saw with the A's, it's what it's about.
I agree. But listen. It's not all unicorns and rainbows for the Orioles. We can't just keep painting this beautiful picture.
You got to bring up Chris Davis.
It's not all good. No, no, no. I'm not even going Chris Davis. I'm not even going to go Chris Davis. I think one of the more concerning things for me is a guy that I had high hopes for this year. Now, this is the second time for me that a center fielder that I had high expectations for did not start off the year great. Austin Hayes, at this point, hitting a flat 100 on the year. He looks to be pressing a little bit at the plate. You can see him between pitches. He steps out of the box. He takes his deep breath. You know, he gets back
in. He's frustrated.
I think he's frustrated. I think he's pressing a little bit. Are you concerned about the way he's performing so far?
I mean, look, I know it's early in the season, but I do have concerns. He came in hot last year.
Yeah.
And his defense is still good.
Yeah.
He's still an above-average defender, which is why he's there. And I know you love Cedric Mullins, but defensively, he's better than Cedric, period.
Yeah, no, I agree
in my
with that.
Opinion.
100%.
His bat, we're seeing the same thing we saw out of Cedric Mullins. He's coming up the first few games, and he's having some struggles. Once there's tape on a guy, you can know where he's chasing. You can know where he's going to lean a little bit more. This is a statistician's game now.
Yeah.
And so with him, it is a little concerning, but I'm going to say I'm going to give it another 2 or 3 weeks. It's a shortened season. But I'll give it another 2 or 3 weeks before I start going, man, we got to get somebody else in there and take a look at somebody else or get something else going.
Screw you, Joe. Mullins does not suck. Just had a rough start. So Drew brings up a good point here. He said, he just hustled out a hit. This is actually what I was going to say is that, you know, Austin Hayes, even through the minor leagues, was a streaky hitter. And he'd go on runs for weeks where he'd hit the cover off the ball and then he'd fall off the face of the earth for a couple of games. I think that's what we're seeing here is we're seeing a guy who's just – in a rut to start the year, but all it's going to take is something like that, a dribbler down the line that, you know, gets his confidence going, you know, and then that he comes up the next at bat, he makes solid contact, he gets a hit, and then it'll go on one of these streaks.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about Austin Hayes. I just hope the Orioles aren't worried about him either and they don't give up on him as early as they gave up on Cedric Mullins.
Because yeah.
They gave up on Cedric Mullins way too quickly.
Yeah, we both agreed on that. He definitely had some good. I think he would have been better in left field or even right field with his speed and his coverage. He just doesn't have the arm for center either. So I think left field in most stadiums is the way to go. But you talk about a guy that, you know, is non-existent. Where the fuck is Chance Sisko?
Yeah, you know, we actually talked about this on Nate's podcast as well. Like, he just... all the hype that we had around him in the minor league, especially with the bat. You know,
yeah, his bat was major league ready. Da, da, da.
The challenge was he wasn't a great defensive catcher, and that's kind of what kept him in the minors for a few, you know, a little bit longer than we would have hoped for. But now at the major league level, it's like, I know I get it. That's why they call, you know, 4A players, right? They're fringe players. They hit well at the minor league system, but the minute that they get to the major league level, it doesn't click for them. And I think we're seeing that with Chance. And unfortunately, I'm starting to get to the point now where I think Chance's best chance is a change of scenery. Kind of like what we're seeing out of Mike Yastrzemski out in San Francisco.
Jeez, why'd you got to bring up that goddamn name?
That's what I'm saying, right? So, like, he was a guy that just got lost in the shuffle here at the minor league system.
He wasn't given a chance here.
He didn't get a chance here, right. Yeah. Exactly. But he wasn't even – his numbers in the minor league system weren't even blowing you away.
They weren't stellar.
They were decent numbers. They weren't great, right? So he didn't get a shot. The Orioles give up on him. They trade him out to San Francisco. clear mind.
For a bag of peanuts, it feels like at this point.
Essentially, it was. Starts over, and now he's tearing the cover off the ball in San
Francisco.
Just
like Christian Walker, as Joe said.
Christian Walker, that's another great example. He went out to Arizona and started ripping the cover off the ball. I think Chance Sisko is another one of those guys. Some guys just can't get over that mental hurdle, right? They get in a funk, either whether it's like him and the hitting coach just aren't clicking, or it's just – oh, you know, I shit the bed the first time I came up to the major league level, and I can't get over that mental hurdle of it. They just need that change of scenery. And, you know, we drafted Adley Rutschman to be the catcher of the future.
You know who they're looking at, whoever's
exactly. So in another year or two, Adley Rutschman will be here. Chance Sisko, if anything, he's going to be a backup to Adley Rutschman, or he's going to have to move to another position.
Third base, like I said.
If he can figure it out with the bat. He brings us no benefit at third base if he can't figure it out with the bat. I think Chance Sisko ends up getting moved for basically another bag of peanuts, and he figures it out somewhere else.
And you're also, you know, you're going to create, if you're doing that, James, you're going to create a backlog because you're also trying to sit there and play Mountcastle at third base.
Well, so I thought he was going to be at first.
They're saying that he's still going to get chances at third base if he comes up because that's their biggest hole defensively is third base right now.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny with Mike. I went to a couple of Bowie's games, and he was ripping the cover off the ball every time I went there. And we talk about Mullins. I went and didn't see much productive out of here, but Mike was always hitting the ball. He was always hustling down there.
I saw Mullins two or three times in Bowie, and I think it's only a small sample size. Yeah. I was only there two or three games, but both games I was there, I got to see him switch it from both sides of the plate. I got to see him make contact and hit the ball well in those games from both sides of the plate. I know it's double A, and it's a big jump going from double A to the majors, but I had high hopes for him. I don't want to give up on him too soon because I don't think he's the center fielder of the future. I don't think he has the arm for it, but I do think that he has a position to be either a platoon guy, a guy that can, you know, come in off the bench and give you a little bit of speed, you know what I mean? Because he's one of the fastest guys on the roster, and I'm not ready to give up on Mullins yet. I like him too much.
Joe says not Mullins again. The thing about Mullins in the minors, when you say he wasn't producing, he wasn't a big hitter, but he did have one of the better eyes, which is why he made it up, why they brought him up.
And speaking when Mullins playing with right field or left field, he's playing right field right now, right?
He's been
played
all
a little over. Yeah.
Well, anyways,
over.
Did you see Mookie?
Throw that he made. That was money. So that throw was almost identical to the first time I ever saw Nick Markakis play. Yep. I told you that story, So that throw was on the money.
That arm, no bounce. Either.
Yeah, no bounce. No, that's what I'm saying. Nick Markakis did that from the corner of Aberdeen Stadium and threw it on the dime.
He did at Camden Yards too.
No, yeah. So I saw him in Aberdeen.
Yeah,
literally, I was three rows off the field behind the third base bag. And ball went down the right field line. He threw it from the corner.
Frozen rope
and got this guy out. That's when I knew Nick Markakis was the real deal, and that was at single A.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, you know, I'm gonna come back to Sisko for a second because Joe chimed in and said Sisko should be playing every day, though. No, because Sisko proved last year that he's a defensive liability at catcher.
Let's be real, though.
Pedro Severino
can't get out of his own goddamn way. He keeps getting catcher interference. Okay, so this is a whole nother topic, and I wanted to bring this up because both of us are catchers, right? So I played catcher my entire life, all the way through, my, you know, Little League, all the way through high school, all my life. I may have gotten hit with the bat one time. One time in, what, 15 years of playing baseball? One time. This happened.
You learn after the first time.
Twice at the major league level in the same inning.
Yeah.
In the same inning to back-to-back batters. It was Aaron Judge and Stanton. I know these guys are behemoths. I know they're huge.
Well, there are people saying, like, so it goes back to, like, Manny, right? Remember Manny did it, like, twice in one game where he hit a guy? And there is a piece that I don't think it was valid in this situation. But there is a piece that's valid that these guys, as you start watching, you stay inside the batter's box.
Yeah.
Now you can have your foot on the line and you're still in the batter's box.
I don't care. Like, as a catcher, you're lining up behind the guy. You need to be able to visualize that. And it's not even like these guys were getting like the tip of his glove. Like, they were taking his whole hand and everything with it. He was way too close.
He was.
And that's just something that, you know, it's a mental relapse. If it happens once, cool. But it happened twice on back-to-back hitters in the same inning.
Yeah, but it was the first inning, and if you looked at it, because I watched it, like the marking,
the line, the batter's box.
It was like gone. It's already the first inning.
They do that. Every first batter gets in there, and they dig into the batter's box, and they clear that line.
And the thing about Means, when he was pitching, when he hit that guy, he was past the line.
Yeah.
I'm talking about inside. If you looked at, they showed the replay, his arm was out of the line when he got hit.
Oh, so that doesn't matter. As long as your feet are in there, that doesn't matter. But the whole point is these guys in the batter's box, the long swings, you know. The only thing I'll say to Pedro's defense when I kind of go back and look at it, both of them are on inside pitches. You don't expect on an inside pitch, I don't care who you are, you don't expect a full extension swing out of a guy on an inside pitch.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm
trying to play a little bit of defense here, but either way, it happened once. My glove's staying back for the rest of the game.
Exactly. All right, James. I don't know if you've been paying attention. Who's going? Who's in the chat room?
Yeah, I have
social media shout out. Man.
I got Sherry, Ryan, Kamal, Nick, Sag, Jason, Romel, Drew, Rob, Craig Zero, and Joe.
Nice. Okay. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Any comments that were interesting to bring up?
No, we're actually hitting a lot of them, but, you know, AB was a big talk, and, you know, Joe's going at it.
Joe's talking about Cisco at DH. What the fuck have you seen Cisco as a hitter to put him at DH? We got too many DHs as it is already.
I would like to see Cisco and then play the Cisco song. That
thong song? Man, listen. I like Chance Cisco. I had high hopes for him, but he just hasn't been able to prove it, and when's enough with the kid.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Scott, so it's time for this week's rundown. And
wait. Did we skip the Terps?
We skipped the Terps.
Oh, shit, that's because
not a whole lot going on.
There's nothing happening in the
Terps. The Terps football squad got their jerseys today. They took some photos today. There's that. Yay.
If we have a season.
Just digging and digging for things to talk about. But
Under Armour's going to take those back probably.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
So speaking of Under Armour, way to set that one up, right? Under Armour, I guess, athlete or actor or now XFL owner, whatever you want to call this guy, Dwayne The Rock Johnson agrees to purchase the XFL.
$15 million to purchase the XFL. Now, it's him, his ex-wife, who most people don't know, but his ex-wife is actually responsible for his movie career. I think it's Danny Garcia is her name. But she, ex-wife, they split up. He said, I still want you to work with me. Because I guess they were really good business partners. And so he asked her to manage him. She was responsible for his movie career. And that taking off, and hell, it's worked out for him. He is the highest paid actor.
I need that kind of woman in my life. Ladies, I'm single.
Yeah, right.
I need a sugar mama.
They met at college.
Yeah, exactly. They met in college, but then he wound up finding another girl. They divorced, and then they wound up still becoming business partners. And the two of them partnered with, I think it was Redbird Capital, it's owned by some billionaire. I don't even know who the hell he is. But the three of them go in as an ownership group and purchased the XFL. Now, the XFL wasn't doing bad pre-COVID. Think about it. Pre-COVID, XFL was in a rundown every week for how well the product looked.
I know, but this is now 2 years. This is now two times that this league has tried to go and it's failed. I'm not saying that it failed due to not being prepared or it wasn't a good product. It failed because of COVID. You're right. But I think this is more so a pat on the back from The Rock back to Vince, kind of.
I got you back.
I got you, man. You helped me with my career. You gave me my shot at the WWF and the WWE and all that. You made me some money early on in my career. Here's a little 15 mil. Take this off the hands.
I don't think it's that. I think it's more like he got, like Joe says, like he was watching Ballers and like, oh, I can finally get my team.
That Baller show was great. Yeah. If you didn't watch it, it was a great show.
It was good. But no, like, I guess I look at it like I question the same thing. Is it something for Vince where he's like bailing Vince out? But then I read an article that it said that Vince was actually thinking about bailing them out himself, but he chose not to.
Yeah.
So then it's like, okay, were they actually failing? That's why he didn't want to put any more money into this. But then on the flip side, let's not forget, before he was a wrestler, before he was an actor, he's a football player.
And not a very good one.
But he made a name for himself in Miami.
I don't know how much of a name he made for himself. Ask Warren Sapp. how good Dwayne The Rock Johnson was. He's like, nah, he ain't replay. He'll tell you. He ain't replay much.
All right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
And listen, he went to the University of Miami. He had to be a pretty damn good football player, but he also had some pretty big and good players ahead of him.
He did. But look, it's one of those things that I think it's interesting. I'm curious to see what they do with it. Do they take it and run with it, bail it back out, continue it, make it better? Look, Rock is an entertainer first and foremost.
Yeah.
But he's also a great – him and Danny.
There were rumors about him potentially running for office. Like, after this whole, you know, obviously everything with Trump and all that stuff, it was like, oh, Oprah's going to run for president and all these –
there was a Rock 2020 thing. It was something else.
And apparently he had talked about it and said he was – it was kind of getting some legs that he thought he might actually do it. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but
– Look, he's – The Rock has his hand in a lot of different things now. I mean, you've got this now with the XFL. He's got the alcohol with Terramana that's doing really well.
Yeah.
His acting career. I tell you what, like you said, get you a Danny because she is. I think she's the brains behind the operation.
Yeah.
And if anybody can do it at this point, to take a guy that was a wrestler and nobody took him seriously, and turn him into the highest paid actor.
Yeah.
In the world.
Yeah, I didn't know that about him. I didn't know he was the highest paid.
Yeah.
Either way, I mean, he's had a hell of a career movie-wise. Everything from little kid movies, like, what was it? The Tooth Fairy, Game Plan. To Fast and the Furious series, like, when he got with
now that. Now Jumanji with Kevin Hart. Him and Kevin Hart are all over Instagram and Twitter and all.
Exactly.
I think she helped, produce it or direct it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then she also helped him get his deal with Under Armour.
Yeah. I mean, he's got that huge deal with them. He's got his own line with them with the Just Bring It stuff, which actually started way back when he came back to WWE for a little bit. And Joe asks, is the alcohol any good? It's a high, we have a bottle of it upstairs. It's not a shooting alcohol. Like, you don't take a shot of this alcohol.
Is it mixing?
It's a mix or it's a sip.
Okay.
Because it's strong, but it's good. This is true tequila.
Okay. I mean, I'm not a big tequila fan.
Yeah, you have to be a tequila fan.
Yeah, I'm not.
But it's
too many bad nights.
It's very, very strong. I think it's for what it is. It's not bad at all. I've had a lot of different tequilas, and it's not bad at all. So
another topic I had to bring up, and this was the inevitable. We all knew that this was going to happen, right? So Joe Kelly from the Dodgers is now suspended for 8 games after throwing a pitch at a couple Houston Astro players. So we talked a little bit about this on Full Count Chaos as well. Joe Kelly, I don't know if you saw this video or not.
The one in his backyard?
Yeah.
Yes.
So he posted this video on social media in the offseason where he was going through working on developing a changeup. And he's got this big...
Wait, how long is he in this? How long has he been in this league and he doesn't have a changeup?
I don't know. He's just working on developing. And he's got this ginormous blow-up carnival-looking game thing.
It's like 8x10, 8 feet by 10 feet.
At least. And it's got the big target.
Wider than the batter's box.
He's got a big target on it and he's throwing against it in his backyard. And the first pitch that you see him throw with this changeup, he throws through his back window, completely misses this ginormous target.
All the way to the right of that year.
Right.
And then you hear his wife go, was that the window? And then did you see the video after where his wife goes inside?
Yeah.
And she goes, Joe is working on a changeup.
Exactly.
This is how it's going.
So if you're asking anybody to start throwing at pitchers or start throwing at hitters, for me, there's no room. And I say this in all seriousness, there's no room for throwing at somebody's head. I don't care if they were cheating or not. That's putting somebody's life at danger. You're talking about somebody throwing 80, 90 mile an hour. If it hits the wrong spot in your head, it can kill you, right? It's not worth it. You don't do that. If you're going to throw at somebody, keep it at the rib cage or below, right? And I'm for that. I'm okay with brushing people back, or I'm okay sending a message, and I'm okay with that. So if the message was, go out there and throw at this guy, throw it at his rib cage, throw it below. Why are you asking one of the guys that couldn't hit a carnival tent, to throw at a guy who's obviously throwing above this dude's head?
The throw at Bregman was intentional. Everybody's up in arms about the throw with Correa. Go back and look at it. It was a curveball that just didn't break. You watch the rotation of the ball. You watch it spin out of his hand. It just didn't break. And here's a guy, to your point, Joe Kelly has always been wild. But you go and you suspend him for his actions. He actually wasn't suspended for it was suspension for his role in the bench clearing.
Yeah.
First of all, you're supposed to have all these things in place that these guys aren't supposed to be leaving the bench area. You're supposed to have. How does no one else?
Right.
You know, AJ Hinch isn't even the head coach over there now. I forget who. Dusty Baker. How is Dusty Baker not suspending for controlling his team for not going after Joe Kelly and clearing the bench? Yet Dave Robertson, yeah, okay, he gets it.
So that's my point, right? Is like this suspension was eight games of a 60 game season, right? That works out to be like I think it's like a
22 game suspension in normal.
Yeah, it's a little over 12% of the season games, which would be like 22 games in a regular 162 game season. For a role in a bench-clearing brawl, which no punches were thrown. It was just a bunch of stupid jawing back and forth. I actually watched a guy narrate it who, like, it was hilarious.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. So, I mean, like, the stuff that they were saying back and forth to each other was just immature, dumb shit. It wasn't anything crazy. To get it suspended 8 games for that? I get, like, where the commissioner probably put a warning out to everybody in Major League Baseball saying, hey, we know that everybody else is pissed off, right? And we know that there's going to be some retaliation with it, but we're not going to have it. So if there is any retaliation, the suspensions are going to be hefty. I get that. I'm sure that probably happened.
But it came out
beginning of the year.
I thought so.
But the thing that gets me is you're saying you can cheat and get nothing except suspending your GM and your coach. But if you try to almost – not even hit somebody, you get 8 games.
But let's also put salt on the wound. What I just said. So they didn't get anything for cheating. They also cleared their bench. Dusty Baker had no control of his team and of that bench, and doesn't get. There's no repercussions for that side of the team.
Right.
Everything's on the side. If you're going to do Dave Roberts there, you have to do Dusty Baker. I'm sorry. That's why this is a giant joke, because the other side to this is you have Joe Kelly, who throws at a team. Everybody knows it was coming. He's not the first. He will not be the last. Somebody else is going to throw at them, and it's going to get ugly at some point. But you have the Marlins, and now we're hearing the Cards.
Yeah, Cards had, what, 15 players or 17 players or something?
Who had to cancel. Both teams have had to postpone the season, and putting the league – at risk of not even having a season this year. Fred Manfred is saying, if this doesn't get under control, because that was the next thing we're going to go over, Fred Manfred is telling the NFLPA, Tony Clark, if the teams don't get this under control, we're not going to have a season. But yet there's no repercussions for them.
Right.
They can postpone those games. I'm sorry. In this day and age, that happens when it's that percentage of your team. If it's more than, I don't know, 20% of your team, you should forfeit.
I agree.
It should be a forfeit. There's your repercussion. But no, there's no repercussions for them. There's no repercussions for the Cards. We're making up those games against the Orioles now.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous. And it just, Rob Manfred is a goddamn clown at this point.
Yeah.
And needs to go.
I agree. Listen.
I'd rather have Bud Selig.
I told you before, like, the fact that teams get to dictate whether or not they're going to play, you know, when there is, it's just.
Like you said, it's a text message.
Yeah, it's literally through a group text message with the Miami Marlins. Like, hey, you know, we had a couple guys test positive, but you guys still want to play today? All right, cool, let's go. Like, the fact that that can happen is absolutely absurd. There needs to be just consistency, and the fact that that doesn't happen is just mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
But last thing in the that I wanted to bring up in the rundown. Several players from the SEC and Big Ten basketball teams are announcing withdrawals from the NBA draft to return to school for another year of eligibility. We saw this hit the Big Ten pretty substantially this past week. We saw Cockburn from Illinois, who's going to come back. This was a guy that, I mean, he lit up the Big Ten statistically, and he's a big dude. He'll be a force. Illinois is going to be a force to reckon with in the Big Ten this year if there is a season. And then you get Luke Garza, the center from Iowa, who's coming back. He's another big guy. Does Sticks come back? That hasn't happened yet. They haven't said anything. Who knows? What's your take on this?
I look at this and I'm not surprised. We talked about this.
Yeah.
Guys are going to come back and, hey, you're going to give me another year to improve my draft stock, especially some of these guys that maybe were going to be second or third rounders.
Right.
They can now come back and put the icing on the cake and maybe show why they should be a first round pick.
Right.
I can't say I blame them. I didn't. We kind of expected to see some of this, especially out of these guys that think, hey, you know, freshmen, or I won't say freshmen. Freshmen probably won't come back as much. But your sophomores and your juniors, they're the ones that are coming back this year. And maybe even some of your seniors that are saying, you know what, maybe I was third round guy this year. Let me see if I can get another year, and maybe I become that second round guy.
Maybe.
And now it's time for the 2 minute warning.
All right, Scott, it's time for the 2 minute warning.
Who's going first?
Like, oh my God.
James wrote the questions this week.
Fred's going first.
Fuck.
I get to call it.
Not it. No. All right, I'll go first. I haven't even seen the questions yet. So, what do we got going on here, James?
The first one is, what sport will play a full season and why?
I guess if we're talking 2020, I'm going to say the NFL, right? Because we know MLB is not going to have a full season. We know the NBA is obviously already in a bubble. We know the NHL is already in a bubble. If we're talking just limited to 2020, I think the NFL. Realistically, I don't think any sport is going to have a full season. I don't think that's going to happen until 2021, next year. And still, I don't even have high hopes for that. I still think next year might even be modified.
When's cricket start in India? That's right, that's there. There's the first sport, right? Like, at this point, I don't, to your point, I don't think anybody's going to be able to get through it. And honestly, I don't know with what we've seen out of college football. I don't know that we're going to get through a full NFL season. I actually think the MLB in 2021 has the best shot.
Okay. All right. What do we got?
Next question is, what rookie is in the NFL will have the biggest impact in the league this year, and why?
Oh, that's easy. I don't even think that's up for debate. As much as I like J.K. Dobbins and I have high expectations for him, it's going to be Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the running back from Kansas City. There's a guy that they just announced, the other running back, I can't think of his name, Damian Williams. He just opted out for the year. Edwards-Helaire, I think, was the most versatile back. He's definitely the best pass-catching back coming out of the draft. I think this is a guy that's going to be flying up the charts in fantasy football everywhere. I think he'll be a first-round pick for most players, for most teams, and I think he'll have the biggest year.
He's the biggest guy that I think you'll watch, and that's the number one pick.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be Trevor Lawrence. I think he goes out to Cincinnati. Or not Trevor Lawrence. First-round pick.
Burrow?
Joe Burrow, sorry. I don't know why I'm thinking Trevor Lawrence for this year.
Did I miss something?
No, Joe Burrow going to Cincinnati, I think that's your biggest impact. This is a guy that could literally change around what's been happening with that franchise, and I think he's going to play that role. It may not be rookie of the year, but it's going to be damn close.
All right, fair enough. I like Joe Burrow, and I think he's in a decent situation in Cincy, as much as a decent situation can be for Cincinnati.
We said biggest impact, so... Yeah.
We'll see. All right, Scott, sign us off, man.
All right, guys. You guys hear me say
stay tuned for the after-hours segment. We got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we got a lot more to talk about. Make sure you guys obviously always check us out each and every week on our website, www.birdlandbs.com. While you're there, obviously we've got the page about all of our episodes. We've got the pages about each of us. We also have the gear page. Go check it out. We've got a bunch more stuff that's
been
coming
out.
Get yourself some gear. Rep it while you're walking around, while you're doing whatever.
I wear it every week. Oh, wait a minute. No.
You never wear it. We need to get you some.
No, my shirts are too tight. I'm getting too big, too swole, too fat for my shirts.
It's all them workouts you're doing. Exactly. All them curls. Yeah, we're all doing those curls, right?
Yeah. Donut curls.
Yeah, right? Make sure you also check us out. BigPlay.com, Big Play Twitter page. Download the Big Play app, BirdlandSports.com. You can also check us out there. Obviously, check us out on all of our social media pages at BirdlandBS. Is how you find us, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. Check us out. Make sure you also rate us while you're – not rate us while you're there. I'm thinking I'm already ahead of myself.
Leave us a review.
Leave us comments. Leave us a review. Make sure you also do that on the audio podcast. If you're – you know, I'd say if you're driving to work, but who does that anymore?
Don't tell them to text and drive. What are you doing, Scott?
Who's driving to work anymore?
Me. Yeah, probably not very many.
Me.
Yeah, James.
Listen to the podcast on your way, James. All right. Make sure you go check out the audio versions podcast. Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to it, we're there. And also make sure you follow each of us individually on our pages. James, go to yourself so they can get your Twitter handle now. It's what? James Bond 2032. I think that's the year that Davis is done, right? Are you making a run for Davis this year?
I like it.
Make sure you make sure you go back, check us out while you're there, and make sure that you also check us out each week when we go live. That threw me off. When we go live each week, 7:45 Eastern Standard Time, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. Come check us out. Join the comment chat room here on the side. For Fred, Brian, James, myself, we'll see you guys next week.
See ya!